Welcome to Building 72, the podcast brought to you by the Entertainment Arts and Engineering Program at the University of Utah. Thank you for joining your hosts, Adam Hunter and Corinne Lewis, to talk about the video game industry and, you know, probably other stuff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again to the podcast extraordinaire from the Entertainment Arts and Engineering Program. Today, we are joined with one of my most favorite people. And I've said that like four times now, Jason. This is Jason Kanagaratnam, and he came through our program in the grad program in cohort 3. And I'm also, of course, always joined with our wonderful alumni and industry manager, Adam Hunter. And we're going to talk about programming today because Jason has been programming in lots of different places, doing lots of different kinds of programming, I think. I don't know. I guess you'll tell us, right?
Yeah. I've been a bit all over the place. I started on Elder Scrolls Online at ZeniMax Online Studios. I was a UI engineer for like 15 months there, trying to help get the console port out the door. And then I switched over to gameplay. And then I moved from there to World of Warcraft, where I basically do the same thing, just gameplay. Been at both of those for about 3 years each now. So,
what did you do at Ubisoft?
I don't. That was that internship, that academia internship.
Yeah.
So that was also gameplay, but we basically took a student prototype and like 40 students turned it into like a full-fledged product. You could beat the whole thing in like an hour and a half, but that was just like gameplay programming in Unreal.
Awesome.
Or Unreal 3, I guess, to date me a little bit.
That was a great experience for all of our people that went to that. Yeah. I mean, obviously just you and Andrew went to the internship, but anyway, let us turn to the list of questions. Are you ready?
Okay. Sure.
Okay. I actually really like this question. What is your favorite thing about being a programmer? Because I think there's a lot of people that programming is scary, or they just, it takes a long time to understand.
I think it's kind of the same sort of feeling as like anyone who's good at like building like things or doing handyman work or that kind of stuff. Like just creating something out of nothing is super satisfying. Like just like working with design and like coming up with a feature that's just on paper, and then slowly over a couple months, like, or potentially years, building it into a full-fledged thing that you can see on the screen is just a very satisfying experience. And I mean, I know you could probably say that about any discipline where you create things, but I don't know, that's probably my favorite part about programming.
I definitely think that's certainly what my experience of programming, which is very limited, but when I was doing programming, it was solving it would solve problems, and I loved that, you know.
Yeah, even like little things still are super satisfying. Like every time I like start learning a new game engine or something, and I just make a little character move across the screen by pressing a button, I'm always just like, I'm a god. So, that hasn't gotten old yet.
That's good. I think that means you chose wisely, right?
Yeah, probably.
So Jason, and you might not be able to answer this question due to wherever your experience lies. Do you feel that you get a kind of artistic satisfaction of it, like an artist who creates something and they look at it? Or is it more of like a, because I'm not a programmer, but I can imagine if I were, my satisfaction would come from the like list organization, like I have made something that works, and that is like all my I's are dotted and all my T's are crossed, and that's what like really makes me feel good. Is there a difference for you at all, or?
It's probably a bit of both. Like having like a checklist of like things that you wanted to have supported, just all done is satisfying. But like, I guess from the artistic point of view, like architecture of systems is very important, especially when you want to like build something that's going to be used for like years on, like, cause like on how, since like everything's a game as a service now, like you're probably just writing it for like 2 to 5 or 10 years in the future, and having that be extensible and like generic as possible is really difficult to do. But oftentimes when you write a system, you'll refactor it a few times and like you'll end up landing on a very elegant solution that feels a lot better than otherwise, I guess. So in that sense, I'd say it's kind of artistic. It's more like logical than like just like drawing a really pretty picture or something like that. But like,
sure,
you kind of know when you like nail an architecture that it's probably going to be like usable in the future in a much better way. So
very cool.
Right, that is cool. We're professionals here, can you tell?
Yeah. So you can probably hear me better now. The mic probably works a little bit better.
Oh yeah, maybe.
So Jason, is your background, you obviously went through the master's program and programming was your, engineering was your field of study. Was your undergrad in CS as well?
No, my undergrad, I double majored in physics and economics, which was also at the U. And then I proceeded to do nothing with both of those degrees for a few years. I was working at Smith's in Park City, actually. And I graduated in 2008 in undergrad, which is not a huge, it's not a great time for the job market. So I ended up just like keeping my job at Smith's. And I was always into video games, but like during that time period, I got way more into video games. I got like a Gamefly account and like started reading a bunch of gaming blogs and stuff, and finally just decided to give programming a shot. So I ended up just taking a few intro CS courses at the U as a non-matriculated student. And then somewhere along the way, I ran into Bob Kessler.
That's what I was thinking.
I think it was Langveld, but convinced me to, because I was just going to take a bunch of classes and then get a CS master's, and one of them convinced me to do the EAE program because the whole point that I was doing it was to get into games, so it sort of made perfect sense.
So you hadn't had any experience with programming before you took those classes?
No, so I spent like about a year and a half taking like, I don't know, 6 or 7 CS courses, but I like learned HTML in middle school and that was about it since then, which so it was pretty much from scratch.
That's really cool, especially because I've had students bring up the concern to me, even at the undergrad level, they're like, well, it's too late for me to become a programmer. Like if I'm already in college, the people who are becoming programmers are people who are doing stuff since they were in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool to hear that is in fact not the case. And that you can still pick it up and become a pro at it, a master at it.
Yeah, I mean, the first few years were definitely rough, but it's totally doable.
We've had other people who came in with like mechanical engineering undergrads. And I think we've had a couple of physics. I think it's the logic. I think it helps, you know, you may not be pushing and pulling things with pulleys or with nuons or muons or whatever, but
yeah. But having like the strong math background and the strong like analytical background, both like apply to computer science strongly. So,
well, it's kind of funny considering if HTML was the first language that you learned, that's such a, that, I mean, markup languages are so different than regular programming. It's just so funny.
Yeah.
So
I actually went to switch from HTML like to PHP, and I started doing that in like Notepad back in like 8th or 9th grade, and I just hated it and was like, programming sucks, and just abandoned the whole idea. Had I actually had like a proper teacher to like teach me like Java or something in high school, I probably would have just done my undergrad in computer science to begin with. But
yeah, that would have been interesting, because I know there's a lot, you know, there's certainly been a lot of stuff, advances in even just Java programming. You know, they've, mm-hmm. I have a friend that's a Java programmer. He works for Blue Origin. So he's doing like rocket programming. Oh, cool. Yeah. So it's kind of fun.
And actually, that's a really good, someone had asked the question, is there much difference between programming for games and programming for just other kinds of software?
So yes and no. I'm kind of the opinion that if you know how to code in general, that you can probably do games as well. I don't know if the industry at large feels that way. I feel like that's sort of been a stereotype where like you can't get a job in games unless you're already in games, that is slowly going away, it feels like. But yeah, I'd say for the most part, it's pretty similar. The biggest differences are games tend to be like more simulation based, obviously. So you need to know a lot more 3D math than like your average web dev would or something like that. But depending on what your field, like depending on what your subdiscipline is in engineering, like even that's not true. Like UI programmers probably aren't really doing much with 3D. Graphics programmers are just doing a ton of it. So it kind of just varies. But I'd say on average, if you know how to code in C++ or any object-oriented language, you could probably jump into games from another programming discipline.
Well, I've definitely heard people talk about it, like the difference is physics, because you don't, like regular code, you don't have to worry about that. But when you are in games, everything has mass or weight or something like that. This is my rudimentary physics knowledge.
So, I mean, a lot of that's just like handled by Havok now for you though. So like using Havok is like a whole area of expertise on your own, but like you don't need to necessarily know how to do like all like the super complicated like collision resolution stuff. You can just like ask Havok, hey, did this ball hit this block? And if it says it did, then do your thing.
Wow, that just makes me wonder what kind of people programmed that, right?
Yeah, I remember, was it Joe Barnes?
Yeah, he is still teaching for us.
Yeah, I remember him teaching us very basic like 2D collision and rotation and stuff like that, and he was like, and if you guys find this assignment like fun, maybe you go be a physics engineer, otherwise probably just use Havok.
Do you think the program, I mean, like what you're doing on a day-to-day basis is really different? And this is I don't know the answer to this, but like ESO, how is the team I would imagine it's far bigger on WoW than it was on the other team.
Yeah, the actual architectures of the games are pretty similar. I guess there's only so many ways to build an MMO. And I've never really, I don't have any AAA experience on not MMOs. But but yeah, ESO, WoW kind of just felt like ESO like times three or something. Like the team's so much bigger. They push out way more content. ESO's like whole tech stack was way more modern because obviously the game's like 10 years I think 10 years older.
I think so, yeah.
Younger, mm-hmm. I guess. But on average, I'd say it was kind of like a lot of the same sort of stuff, just like colored like a different way.
So do you, so you're obviously advancing in your career, right? So when you went to the WoW team, are you doing more actual programming? Are you like, are you running a team, or what's happening for you personally right now?
So I basically just switched from being a gameplay engineer, individual contributor on ESO to doing the same thing on WoW. I'm now currently like looking into if I want to like be a lead or something like that. I actually had an intern this summer for the first time. That went really well. It sort of went well. COVID made it a remote internship, which was kind of awkward, and he was in Florida, so the time change was further complicated
things. I bet, yeah. But
aside from that, I think it went really well, and I enjoyed like mentoring him. So I also tend to like the more senior you get, the more you end up like getting paired with new hires for training them and stuff. So so that's kind of fun. But
ironic given your internship experience at Ubisoft in your tiny little one room.
Yeah. The ZOS internship was a little more traditional, I think.
Right. That's so funny. Oh my gosh.
So Jason, with you being on a team of a jillion people, I know that in smaller studios, it's a really good skill to be able to, like if a designer can code or can script, that's always a good thing to have, because if you don't need an engineer to implement your stuff, then great. Does that same dynamic work in such a large studio with such a large team, or are there enough people where it's like, you know what, let's just have design do design, and let's have art do art, and let's have engineering do engineering?
We tend to be pretty sequestered in that way, but it does help when people like know a little bit about one or the other, because like design often ends up having to like script in some little ways. So like, for instance, on WoW, a lot of the game logic is implemented through Lua on the server. So if they want to do something non-standard, they have like different hooks where they can like script in Lua and change things and whatnot. So that's still programming. It's not like probably at the level of like the engineers, but they still need to know like some basic stuff, like how to branch and loop and things like that. And even without Lua, like most game engines now have like some sort of visual programming language that design is messing with all the time, like Blueprints and Unreal, or I can't think of another one, but that kind of thing.
Yeah, our students are constantly complaining about Blueprints, for sure, still.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with them. I just started messing around with Unreal 4 this summer. But yeah, those are basically like a one-to-one mapping of like C++ functions and objects and stuff. Like you even have to like cast from float to int within Blueprint. So like design, being a designer with some programming chops definitely helps in that regard.
Are you mostly programming C++?
Yeah, almost exclusively. The only reason I go into Lua really is if I'm helping out the UI team or if I'm debugging a designer script for them.
I guess I just didn't know what WoW was in. Like, I'm assumed it was a proprietary engine, not like Unity or something like that.
Yeah, it is. Oh. It's just completely hand built in C++. Actually, I think it technically branched off Warcraft 3. We've gotten to the point now where like you might occasionally open a source file that's like older than some of the associate engineers on the project.
That's hilarious. Oh my gosh. Well, that makes me feel old.
Is C++ pretty prevalent? We had a ton of questions, and they all tell me what language to learn so I can learn it. But is C++ like the thing that a lot of games are built off of, or?
Yeah, it's pretty much the AAA standard. So like AA and indie games can go to like, might use Unity or something like that, which is C#, but just about every game studio that's building like a console, or I guess not necessarily a console game, but like a AAA game is going to be in C++. I think that's like very, very slowly starting to change. Like I heard Ready at Dawn is making their next game in Rust, but
I heard that too. That was crazy.
Oh no, did I disconnect? Oh no, you're
still. You're still. Okay.
Zoom excitement.
So I'd say aside from that Ready at Dawn potential thing I heard, pretty much everyone's in C++ just because there's just so much support for it. Like all the DirectX libraries, all the OpenGL libraries and Vulkan, all of that's in C++. There's a lot of people that know it, and it just compiles right to like native source code. So,
well, I'm sure you remember that at the U anyway, they really don't talk about specific language classes because they want you to, you know, this is more of an underlying foundational thing that they want you to learn, like object-oriented programming or data structures and algorithms or, you know, whatever. Did you learn Java when you were taking those initial classes, and did you find the learning C++ was just another language, or is it a lot different?
They're pretty similar. So I took like, I guess 1410 and 2420, that's the intro to OOP and algorithms. Yeah. Districts. I took both of those in Java, and then I took like software practice 1 and 2, and those were in C# and C++, just to kind of give you like a breath, but they're all pretty similar. The biggest difference with C++ is you have to manage memory yourself,
right,
which can get sort of tricky because C++ has a lot of baggage because it's age as well. So like when to pass things by pointer versus reference, and like when, like who should be in charge of the memory, and like if you want to use a smart pointer, which is like a more modern C++ kind of thing, like all those things, like knowing those kind of implementations are important.
I can't even begin to tell you how many times I've heard like capstone teams just, this is taking all the memory. And Bob will always say, well, have you know? Yeah. Like they forget that it's just sucking up every resource possible.
Yeah. So I'd still say like, I'd say if you're strong in like your OP and data structures and stuff, you can pick up the rest along the way. But if you were gonna try and get into AAA games, like having C++ experience is mm-hmm. definitely helpful.
I think, so one of the questions I'm always interested to hear what programmers say about this is, do you feel any sense of competition between yourself and other programmers, like within the same company or even just generally in games? Like, do you look at developer blogs and things like that?
I mean, I feel like I do just to learn from other people, and I don't really feel like my coworkers and I are like competing for promotions. Like, that's not really like a zero sum game or anything like that. In general, both places I've worked, like everyone just is eager to learn and people are also eager to teach. So like, I have no problem just poking whoever knows about a topic, and I've never had them like come back to me with anything other than like, yeah, this is how you do this thing. So
I'm glad to hear that, because actually that's pretty much universally what I've heard. The answer to that is like, you know, like we all want to get better. Mm-hmm. That's why we're in games.
Imposter syndrome is real as well. So like, but pretty much everyone has it. So we all kind of just feel that we don't know what we're doing, but pretend we do. And I guess if everyone feels that way, then it's obviously not a real thing. But
you know, I don't know why, what happened with this imposter syndrome thing. Like, you're right. Everybody in games has it. It's so weird.
I kind of just think it's life in general, unless you're like super egotistical, you're probably just generally going to think you're not as amazing as everyone else seems to think you are. So,
well, I still haven't figured out how to be an adult. So, you know,
yeah,
we'll get there eventually.
Maybe.
Speaking to something you said, Jason, about wanting to help each other learn and everything like that, I sat by the programmers in my most recent studio, and engineering was probably the loudest of all the departments, because it would often be someone at their computer and then they just shout over their shoulder, hey, what did we do for whatever, whatever? And then the answer would come floating over. Is inter-collaboration like that within the, because obviously games is a collaborative thing within the different disciplines, but within programming, in your experience, is there a lot of communication between team members as far as like clarifying things or troubleshooting? Like, I was thinking of doing this. Does anybody think that's a good idea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of that, especially with like a code base as big as WoW's. Like, we kind of all naturally like broke up into our own like subject matter experts. So like, I'm like the spell and area trigger and like a few other things guy. But because all these systems intersect with each other, like it's not uncommon for the quest person to need to do something with spells. So they might ask me how the best way to set something up. So we're kind of always talking in that regard. And then every check-in has to be reviewed by at least one other person. So we have like some software for uploading our changes, and like, we usually put like the subject matter expert on the code review and then like a few other people. And if you are the subject matter expert, then we usually try and put like a number two, because we try and spread out knowledge too, in case someone like gets hit by a bus, then we call it the bus factor. Like, if someone knows, way too much about a system and no one else does, we try and like shrink their bus factor so that we can,
it's like a quantifiable, like, yeah, a bus factor of 9. We got to get somebody else in there.
Yeah, exactly. So
that is amazing.
But yeah, we're always asking each other questions. Same with design. Like, we actually have like a help desk thread, because our tools are so old and like they've kind of grown organically. So like, knowing the right way to do something often means like stepping through the source code and just like seeing like how this flag interacts with this kind of spell in this setup or whatever. So we just have like a help desk email mailing list that design can just be like, I'm trying to do this thing and it's not working, how should I do this? And then whatever gameplay engineer knows how will usually grab it and look into it for them.
I'm picturing you like reading the Matrix, like so when I'm like, you know, I you're gonna laugh, I'm gonna tell you this, I've never played any other mage besides a Frost mage.
That's kind of how I am at the moment, actually.
I have loved Frost from the second I started playing, and anyway, and I just picture you back on the other side of the screen, like, you know, maybe min-maxing my or my blink. Like, I want to blink more. Come on. I can convince you.
That's pretty much all tweaked by design at this point. They have, like, settings for everything imaginable, so.
Well, I know who to call over there, so.
Yeah. All we did was create a spell effect that teleports you, and they decided where it teleports you and how often you can do it and all that sort of stuff.
I know. I missed the legendary whatever it was that let you, like, perma-blink. Like, I could blink.
Oh, yeah.
Dang.
They also, they put Shimmer on the GCD, and everyone got super mad, so they took it back off, I think.
Oh, interesting. I didn't see that. So,
I will give full disclosure right now that I have never once played WoW, because I know that, like, ever since it came out, I knew that the second I did, that would just be the end of me. And so
you see these?
Mm-hmm. Oh, are those all your?
On my screen.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Nice.
Because I have tunes on both places. I'll put those away now. Like I told you, I'm really bad at being an adult.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I'm doing it right.
Or you're really good at being an adult and everybody else is bad.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to mean.
So Jason, here's one for you. I want you to, if you can, think about it in two aspects. What is your typical workday like, both as a programmer and working for a large AAA studio like Blizzard? Walk us through, put us in the shoes of Jason for a day.
Okay, so that sort of varies depending on which part of the development cycle we're in. So like right now, we're kind of all hands on deck to get Shadowlands out the door. So I am basically on bug fixing and then on like assisting designers with trying to get their all their content working. So like a typical day right now is I like look at my bug list organized by like priority and just grab the one that sounds like either the most important or the most fun to work on at the time based on like those kind of things. And then depending on what emergencies pop up with design, I might pivot off of that to help them with their particular issue. When we're actually like in full development mode and not in like bug fixing mode, a typical day is more like I usually end up like working with design on whatever my next feature is going to be. So they'll usually have some sort of rough like design doc like sketched out, and then there's usually like some sort of intro meeting that involves like all the disciplines required, like if art or UI or more than one discipline of design need to be there, like we'll all have like a kickoff meeting, and then I'll work directly with the designer to build out all the logic in the game about how it should work, and then also like the interface that they'll have to use to actually get their content into my system. I'm doing a bunch of hand motions, but they're all below the camera. But yeah, as a gameplay engineer, we don't actually like build like the tool that they will be using, but we organize all the data that they'll be setting up, and then a tools engineer will like build a GUI or something for it. So it's usually a lot of back and forth until I get like a good idea of how I want to set up the thing. And then I just code with my headphones on for a while and then poke them when new questions arise, because there's always like cases that like no one thought about till you actually get into implementing. So but yeah, it's all very collaborative. There's just like a ton of back and forth. Like I'm often like walking across the hall to the designer's desk to chat with them about something. Not anymore, now we're just on Slack, but yeah, I think that kind of
definitely.
Totally. Well, I think it's interesting how I I think a lot of people think that games are the, like, programming specifically is like the single like you're by yourself and you're coding with your, you know, by your, like you really are, like it's the introvert's job for the game, but it's, it doesn't ever, I mean, I'm sure some people can live like that, but games are teams, right?
Yeah. That's actually been the hardest part about the whole quarantine is that like as a programmer, I can totally do my job remotely. I'm just typing text for the most part. And like, as long as I'm not trying to test like twitchy gameplay, it all works fine over a remote desktop. But like just being able to like walk over to someone's desk and like debug it with them, or like have a problem and be sitting in a pit surrounded by a bunch of people who can like overhear you or whatever, like that has all kind of gone away. I've heard the designers have been struggling more with that than even programmers, because like so much of what they do is like bounce ideas off each other, and like not being able to like see like facial reactions even sometimes if you don't have a webcam or something has been like hard on their process for
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that this is going to change work, but I mean, I think we've lost a lot of efficiency. I mean, even just my job, like I stand up and walk down the hall and talk to somebody, like nobody calls each other anymore. And so it's like, we do Zooms for 10 minute meetings, you know, just so we can see each other. So it's, I think that's happening everywhere. And I think certainly all the game makers that we know are in the same, like, you want to have time where you don't have to see another human, but because you have to think and do something, but so much of game development seems like it's about being with other people, because other people make us more creative, I think. So.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't be surprised if like a lot of studios start letting people like work from home, like on Fridays or periodically or something, but pretty much all of us are eager to get back into the office. It's also just more fun because you just have like Nerf guns and junk all over the place. So.
I think it's hard to make a fun game if you're not having fun. And
yeah,
it makes me a little concerned about what we're going to get the quarantine games.
I don't know, Fall Guys, right? That's
Like, I think we might actually be over the post-apocalyptic game for a while.
Yeah.
It's a little too close to home.
I don't really want to watch The Walking Dead right now.
Yeah, we've pretty much only been watching sitcoms since this all started.
Yeah, us too. Us too. Doctor Who, a lot of Doctor Who. So,
do you see, Jason, do you see crunch? It, like, we're talking about changes in the industry and like if people are going to be working from home and things like that. Do you see crunch as like a culture changing? It, like from when you entered the industry to now, to as you see it going, do you think we as an industry are getting better about it? Are we getting worse about it? What are your thoughts on that?
So I've been extremely lucky in the last like 6 or 7 years. I've only had to crunch for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Like that was like on ESO, we were trying to get the console port out the door and there was like a emergency and we just like worked for 12 hour days for like that 1 month and that's been it. I think games as a service, if you don't keep a totally absurd like Fortnite kind of release schedule, there's always the next patch, so you often don't have to crunch. But like we've different parts of both my teams have definitely crunched and are currently crunching, and I would say it's gotten like better. Like this is the first time from what I've heard where Blizzard decided they were going to try not to crunch at all in Shadowlands. We didn't quite succeed, but like this is the first time where like a lot of the production team even like had that as like a mandate at the beginning. So like I think progress is being made in that regard. I mean, I still hear like all the horror stories at like Naughty Dog and stuff like that, but I feel like on average industry-wide, it's like people are more cognizant of it. I think they're also realizing that like if you're gonna burn out your senior talent, that ends up like costing a lot more than just replacing them with a bunch of juniors that still need to spin up. So
yeah, I think Blizzard learned that early. And it sounds like, I mean, most of the people that I know go to Blizzard stay at Blizzard, which is kind of amazing, you know. And I think Blizzard does it seems like to me, but maybe I'm, you know, prejudiced, but it seems like they're better at hiring carefully, you know. So they don't hire 9 million people. And you know they hire carefully, and then people like who they're working with and what they're doing, and Blizzard's still innovating, and you know, it feels like to me that I mean, it's not, no company's perfect, but I mean, I've certainly heard you talk about it. I've certainly heard, you know, several of the other alumni that we have that are at Blizzard that really have no intention of leaving if they, you know, want to have their careers there. Mm-hmm. And I think you're
forward at some point, so that helps.
Yeah, right. I mean, I do think that the way you describe that as games as a service is really, you know, I mean, Blizzard has that locked in and has for mm-hmm. almost decades now, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's still like a double-edged sword. Like if you, because gamers will just burn through whatever content you release within like you can spend 2 years making and they're done with it in like 8 days. So,
yep. And then they're mad so like, it took them 8 days, not 20 days.
Yeah, exactly. So like if, like you could still fall into like the crunch trap of like trying to release stuff way too fast, but it does make it easier knowing that like there's always just another patch a few months away to work on that thing you didn't manage to get into this one. Whereas like trying to ship like a single player game on a release date that needs to basically be complete on day one, like puts a lot more pressure on you to get it out the door.
Well, we certainly have friends that are living that life, and I think we can see that that's hard.
Yeah.
So speaking of those teams, so when you are working on a team, what makes your job easier?
Like
what do you expect? Like, I guess what I, this is a leading question. What I want you to say is you have to be able to communicate well.
So that is definitely an important part, like constant communication, because like we were mentioning, everything is super collaborative, and oftentimes like maybe you can fix something yourself, but if you know the person, like if you know a person like is available to answer the question, maybe he'll save you like a day and a half of time. And especially in gameplay, gameplay is like this weird intersection between all the other programming disciplines and the design team. So you have to be able to kind of like speak design language and speak programming language. And like oftentimes like a feature will involve like the server team, the engine team, the UI team, and like the encounter team and the class design team or something like that. And like the person who's like gluing it all together is usually the gameplay engineer, because like they're the ones who, like our expertise is like much more breadth, not depth. So like we're the ones that can kind of like, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but basically like communicate between all the different sub-disciplines. So yes, communication is very important. I feel like being able to communicate makes everyone else's job easier, in addition to you just being able to get everything sorted out.
Well, do you feel like the time that you spent in our program, because you were working so closely with people of other disciplines, do you think that helps? I mean, I hope you think that helps, but I'm just like wondering if you have noticed that other people that you've worked with don't have that experience. And
I don't know if I've noticed other people. Like there's definitely people I've worked with that are less good at communicating than others, but yeah, I would say the two biggest helpful things I got out of the program were like building a game with a team of people, because that's basically just like a smaller version of what we're trying to get jobs doing, and then the engineering track, just like basically building your own game engine. This isn't really related to the question, but just like that whole process of going through Joe's class, I remember like a week into working on ESO, just like realizing like the thing I built over 2 years in school was just like scaled up to 11 for ESO, but it was basically the same thing. And that was like kind of like a weird little like mind blowing experience where I was like, oh, it was all relevant. Like,
I think you would love to know that.
Yeah.
We're really lucky to have Joe, because he loves teaching and he's still working with Epic, so you know, we got lots of cool stuff from him.
He's actually working on the engine, right?
I think so, yeah. So I know he's, well, I mean, he was working in the chair offices, but for Epic, so But I'm sure everybody's home now, so.
Yeah, probably.
Jason, a question I get asked a lot, and it's the hardest question for me to answer due to the fact that I know very little about programming. But since you mentioned you had an intern and since you've gone through the whole process, what, from a student standpoint, what makes a good engineering portfolio? Like what should they be highlighting? Do they need to show their GitHub to actually show part of their code? Do they, how, what's the best way for a programmer other than just saying, I know C++ and I worked on AI pathing and collision. Well, what else can they do to help improve that?
Being able to talk about like those things that you said, like if you worked on AI pathing and collision, like what did you do it in? And then like being able to answer questions about it. We love seeing those kind of things on resumes, because then we can ask questions about them. And then if you can speak intelligently about pathing or collision, that means like we believe you actually are the one who implemented it, and it wasn't just like something you you worked on a team for and someone else actually did all the work or something like that. So really, just, I feel like this is sort of something I just heard constantly while I was in the program, and it's because it's true, is just like having a ton of projects under your belt that are relevant to game design that you can talk about, is like that kind of stuff really stands out. Like doing that Ubisoft prototype really helped me get an internship. And then once I had that internship, suddenly like a bunch of doors opened up. So, and then I remember my first ZeniMax gameplay interview, I just talked all about Vinyl. That was our thesis game, and like all the different things I had to do on it. And like being able to just talk about that kind of thing for hours, like proved to them that I had experience and all the kind of stuff they were looking for.
Do you think that, because you talked about talking about it in the interview and everything like that, if someone had like a portfolio page or a projects page where they were showing off, should they be talking about, obviously not a 10,000 word typed treatise, but like, should they be talking about it in the same kind of way? Or should they, like, how would they physically present that info? Would it just be, here was my experience and here's a bunch of texts, or?
So on the resume, because like if you have like your own portfolio website or something, that's kind of helpful. I don't know how many people actually end up like taking the resume and going to that website. I usually try to, but I can't speak for all interviewers. But like on the resume, I usually find like having like a project and then like a few bullet points of the things you did kind of like basically like make me realize like, oh, they've like messed around with like spatial partitioning or collision or pathfinding or whatever. And then that kind of leads me, that usually makes like a resume stand out for me more, and then gives me a bunch of follow-up questions in the phone screen or the interview afterwards. Anything that makes me think you've messed around with 3D math is also super helpful. Interviewers love to like ask about like dot product and cross product and stuff like that. So
I don't know what those words are. That's because I'm not a programmer.
Yeah.
When you talk about 3D math, all I can think about is chess, like the 3D chess from Star Trek.
Yeah. I just think of like points in space and rotating triangles and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we are coming to the end of our time with you. I'm so sad. It goes by so quick. So we kind of like to end with asking you if there's some advice that you would like to give to students that are going to hear you. Anything you want to say?
One thing I feel like is super important, and sometimes people don't like it as much, is utilize your network. Like people you know can help you get into the industry so much easier than doing it on your own. Like, it doesn't matter if it's like a point of pride thing or whatever. Just like, if you know someone that can get you an interview, like you might just get passed up for no reason other than like someone else applying had someone to like make their point their resume out. So like definitely like take advantage of all the people you know that can get your foot in the door. Once your foot is in the door, then it's all you, and you can prove how great you are. But don't be shy about trying to get help wherever you can.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Jason. It's been so amazing to see you. And I can't wait to see you more. We need to get back to Boston.
Oh, yeah. That'd be super fun.
I know. Thanks.
All right, cool.